Welcome to Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in Cambridge. I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and it's my pleasure, also my duty, I think, not to mention my obligation or even obsession, to invite you to attend. It's a special show this evening. Well, they're all special, of course, but this show is special in the sense of being different from other shows. Yes, I will still hold to my self-imposed rule of playing one Dylan song and one Kinks song and reading one piece from Stevenson, but the selections will be a bit top-heavy this time. Most of the show will feature Kinks songs, since they are so appropriate to our theme for the week, which is London. I have been preparing an intensive week-long residential course on the cultural history of London, 1600 to the present, and my head is filled with London details. And as I was reading about the social history of London in the 20th century, I suddenly realized that so much of this was very familiar, since it had all been dramatized in Kinks songs. The Cockney family moving out of inner London to a suburban setting, the demolition of old houses, the despair of trying to make ends meet, not to mention the Carnabician army of dandies and dedicated followers of fashion. And so here's what I propose to do this evening under lamplight. I want to share with you something Stevenson wrote about London, and we'll hear a Dylan song about London, and then shift over to the Kinks, who will take up the rest of the show with a panorama of London songs. And just a reminder before we throw ourselves into the show that you can always reach me at lamplight@cambridge105.fm. and can hear this show again and catch up on the archives at momentsunderlamplight.com, where you can also leave comments and get responses, too. Now for London. Our first stop is the London of 1878, where the 27-year-old Robert Louis Stevenson was spending much of his time, wasting his time, as his elders would say, writing for a weekly newspaper called London. There were almost no readers of this newspaper, which was edited by old friends of Stevenson's, and this meant that Stevenson could feel free to be as outrageous and playful as he wanted. In these pages appeared the stories that would later form his New Arabian Nights, a collection of stories set in outrageously absurd London, stories that a few years later would have a cult following amongst the avant-garde in New York. But let me read from a short essay written in response to an experiment to light Pall Mall by electric light early in the spring of 1878. People rejoiced that this new electric light was so bright that it was almost like day. Here, they proclaimed, was another instance of the scientific 19th century showing its ability to overcome any obstacle nature put in its way. Stevenson took the opposite view. For one thing, this new way of lighting was mechanical. Before, the very human, in fact the almost heroic figure of the lamplighter, would make his rounds lighting each gas lamp individually. Now, however, it's done anonymously. Spectacular, but inhuman. Here's the picture he gives us in his plea for gas lamps. A sedate electrician somewhere in a back office touches a spring, and behold, from one end to another of the city, from east to west, from the Alexandra to the Crystal Palace, there is light. Fiat lux, says the sedate electrician. What a spectacle, on some clear, dark nightfall, from the edge of Hampstead Hill, when in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, the design of the monstrous city flashes into vision. A glittering hieroglyph, many square miles in extent. And when, to borrow and debase an image, all the evening street lamps burst together into song. Such is the spectacle of the future, preluded the other day by the experiment in Pall Mall. Star rise by electricity, the most romantic flight of civilization. The compensatory benefit for an innumerable array of factories and bankers' clerks. But there were also aesthetic objections. The light was inhumanly harsh. Stevenson had just seen the gigantic electric lights in Paris, huge towers of light with sharp lights and shadows. A new sort of urban star, he says, now shines out nightly, horrible, unearthly, obnoxious to the human eye, a lamp for a nightmare. Such a light as this should shine only on murders and public crime, or along the corridors of lunatic asylums, a horror to heighten horror. Scientific and technological progress is all very well, he implies, but how does it strike the human imagination? What we prefer for our more civilized occupations is the softer light from the old gas lamps, where soft joys prevail, where people are convoked to pleasure and the philosopher looks on smiling and silent, where love and laughter and deifying wine abound, there, at least, let the old mild lustre shine upon the ways of man. And as you walk around London, perhaps you'll be lucky and see some of the old lamps with their crossbars for the old gas lamp lighter's ladder as he climbs to light the lamp. We still have some of those lamps in Linton. Okay, now for a jump, no smooth transitions here, to our Dylan song from the rather obscure 1990 album Under the Red Sky. The song is called TV Talking Song, and it's set in London at Hyde Park Corner, where you can hear all sorts of disputatious people announcing their views about the world and arguing with others. Like Stevenson's electric lights, the television, so argues one man, is too bright for the human eyes. It's too bright a light, he said, for anybody's eyes. If you've never seen one, it's a blessing in disguise. The news of the day is on all the time, all the latest gossip, all the latest rhyme. Your mind is your temple, keep it beautiful and free. Don't let an egg get laid in there by something you can't see. I like that. I think I'm going to try to work that line into my speech or writing sometime. Don't let an egg get laid in there by something you can't see. The egg being something harmful, infesting our imagination, and through the imagination, both our mind and our heart. Dangerous stuff. It's all been designed, he said, to make you lose your mind, and when you go back to find it, there's nothing there to find. Every time you look at it, your situation's worse. If you feel it grabbing out for you, send for the nurse. Well, that's a pretty dire view of television, based on truth, of course, but carried to a fanatical extreme. And then the final stanza, the resolution of sorts. The crowd began to riot, and they grabbed hold of the man. There was pushing, there was shoving, and everybody ran. The TV crew was there to film. They jumped right over me. Later on that evening, I watched it on TV.
One time in London, I'd gone up a walk past a place called Hyde Park where people talk about all kinds of different guys. They have their point of view to anyone passing by, that's who they're talking to. There was someone on the platform talking to the folks about the TV guide and all the pain that it invoked. Too bright a light, he said, for anybody's eyes. If you've never seen one, it's a blessing in disguise. I'm moving closer, got above my toes. Two men in front of me were coming to blows. A man was saying something about children when they're young being sacrificed dead while lullabies are being sung. Began to wander, but his voice was ringing loud. It will destroy your family, your happy home is gone. No one can protect you from it once you've done it all. It will lead you into some strange pursuits, lead you to the land of forbidden fruits. It will scramble up your head and drag your brain about. Sometimes you gotta do like Elvis did and shoot the damn thing out.
Right, that was Bob Dylan's TV talking song from Under the Red Sky. And now it's time to move over to the Kinks and their picture of London. We haven't time for a comprehensive view of all their songs dealing with London, but we'll see what we can do. First, we have a picture of a working-class family in the 1930s. They're renting their house, perhaps like Ray's family, living slightly north of the inner city. And they have a car, and they take a holiday from stressful London by going for a drive in the country. It seems like all the world is fighting. They're even talking of a war. Let all the Russians and the Chinese and the Spanish do their fighting. The sun is shining. We're going driving. Drop all your work. Leave it behind. Forget all your problems and get in my car and take a drive with me. They have sandwiches and tea in a flask and plenty of beer and gooseberry tarts. Nice, simple English food for having a picnic in the grass. And all the debt collectors, rent collectors, all will be behind us. London, we see, is a place to escape from, away from the oppressive housing and smoke and rush, out to the country and freedom, for a few hours at least. And where are they going? Past Barnet Church, up to Potter's Bar. They're barely beyond what we know today as the M25, still in the very much built-up area. But in the 1930s, the countryside was a little nearer than today. And Potter's Bar, though still a bedroom community for the fairly prosperous people working in London, was still considered an exotically rural place for the city folk. Listen to their innocence in seeking their one day out in the rustic haven of South Hertfordshire.
Come.
there's a real sing-along for you. The kind of thing Ray and Dave Davis knew from the parties always going on in their London childhood. Only probably without the irony. Drivin' is from the album Arthur, or The Rise and Fall of the British Empire, written as part of a musical drama for Granada TV in 1969, which was never made, but at least the music was finished, and we have that. From the 1930s, we move to the 1940s, and that, of course, means the war. And for London, it means the Blitz. Is there anyone else who's written a rock song about the Blitz? But Ray has. And the Kinks had great fun putting together this song, also from the album Arthur. We saw the simple innocence of the working-class family as it took the best holiday it could think of out past Barnet Church and to Potter's Bar. Here's the way they responded to the war, preserving their faith in all that the government had to tell them, and singing their way through it all.
Well, Mr. Churchill said, Mr. Churchill said, we gotta fight the bloody battle to the very end. Mr. Beaverbrook said, save our tin, and all the garden gates and empty cans are gonna make us win. We shall defend our island on the land and on the sea. We shall fight them on the beaches, on the hills and in the fields. We shall fight them in the streets. Well, Miss Montgomery says, and Miss Mountbatten says, we gotta fight the bloody battle to the very end. As David Edwards said, we'll meet again someday, with all the sacrifices we must make before. We'll be right back.
Blitz was terrible. The incendiary bombs fell nightly from 7th of September to early November 1940, and intermittently until May 1941. That's a long time to suffer the threat of devastation. But the Londoners' spirit was not crushed, as Hitler had hoped. 3 years later, the second Blitz involved the doodlebugs, silent, unstoppable, unmanned bombs that exploded when they fell, creating enormous destruction. The Blitz killed 20,000 people in London, a horrific number, but actually much smaller than the catastrophic numbers predicted at the beginning of the war, and it damaged or destroyed 3.5 million homes. But here's Ray turning the Blitz into some sort of comedy or even satire against the ruling class's manipulation of the others. That was a very daring thing to do only 25 years after the war. Well, the war's over, and people are trying to get back to normal. Only there's nowhere to live. Even if their houses had survived the bombings, many, most, working-class families in inner London found themselves being evicted from their houses, which were then knocked down to make way for new roads or housing estates or money-making schemes for the investors. But there was new property going up further out of inner London, where investors bought up and knocked down the small communities and turned the place into a row of identical little boxes, as Ray says. Yes, it was good to move out of the slums, but what pleasure was there in moving to some sterile settlement with no sense of community? Let's look at a series of songs about this experience of being displaced after the war. The first song is called Demolition, sung by the builders who have bought everything up cheap and are putting up cheap housing for a quick turnaround. This is not just class propaganda. The statistics of such things going on after the war are disheartening. The song, from the album Preservation Act 1, begins ominously, and then we are overwhelmed by voices from all sides coming in to prey on us. At least the trumpets sound triumphant.
I spy my little eye, anything here that I can buy.
I see a little thatched cottage looking so neat. With compulsory purchase, we can buy it up cheap.
Then we'll pull up the floorboards, tear down the walls, rock the foundations until the house falls.
Like a pack of crashing to the ground.
Then we'll build a row of identical boxes and sell them all off at treble the profits. Demolition!
But it's got a lovely patio.
Stainless steel kitchen sink.
Gas, fire, central heating.
Whoa! Specifically designed for modern day living.
Nothing's permanent, nothing lasts. We sold all our houses, so put them up fast.
We're gonna buy up this town and pull it all down. Oh, I'd love to hear the demolition sound of concrete crashing to the ground. Demolition!
Yeah.
stainless steel kitchen sink, gas-fired central heating, specifically designed for modern-day living. Yes, the new kind of salesmanship, aimed at the consumers, getting them to want what they are told they want. It's time to make some money, it's time to get rich quick, it's the wonderful world of capitalism. But next, we see this all from the point of view of the dispossessed, the poor guy who got a letter this morning with some serious news that's gone and ruined my day. The borough surveyors used compulsory purchase to acquire my domain. They're going to pull up the floors, they're going to knock down the walls, they're going to dig up the drains. Here come the people in gray, whose mindless rules care no more for the individual than the greedy capitalists had. We are in a world of no individuality, no personality. People in gray have gone and taken away my right to voice my complaint. Her Majesty's government has sent me a form. I must complete it today. But it's making me blue. Don't want to tell all my secrets to the people in gray. The song is from the Muswell Hillbillies album, an album centered around the London dispossessed. And as I've said before on the show, it's always teetering on the edge of madness. You can hear it in the guitars.
I got a letter this morning with some serious news that's gonna ruin my defense. The borough surveyors use compulsory purchase to apply my domain. They're gonna pull up the floors, they're gonna knock down the walls, they're gonna dig up the drains. Here come the people in gray, they're gonna take me away. I'm so unprepared, I got no time to pack and I've got nothing to wear. Here come the people in gray to take me away. Me and my baby gonna get on a train that's gonna take us away. I'm gonna live in a tent. No more rain. We're gonna be no more rain. We're gonna
Here Come the People in Grey by the Kinks on Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 with Robert Louis Abrahamson. And so the working class Londoners move north, out of Bethnal Green or wherever, to Hornsey, Muswell Hill, Crouch End, all very desirable locations today for affluent Londoners, but only one step up in the 1950s from the inner city. Or one step down, perhaps, as the people had to leave so much behind them. The singer of the next song, Muswell Hillbilly, refuses to give up. If Here Come the People in Grey expresses defeat in the face of mindless authority, Muswell Hillbilly shows defiance, if only by, for some reason, backing the song with that twangy country western guitar. They'll move me up to Muswell Hill tomorrow. Photographs and souvenirs are all I've got. They're going to try and make me change my way of living, but they'll never make me something that I'm not. 'Cause I'm a Muswell Hillbilly boy, but my heart lies in old West Virginia. What's that all about? As I say, this voice is on the edge of insanity and can deal with this traumatic upheaval perhaps only by retreating into a country western fantasy land. They're putting us in identical little boxes, no character, just uniformity. They're trying to build a computerized community, but they'll never make a zombie out of me. They'll try and make me study elocution, because they say my accent isn't right. They can clear the slums as part of their solution, but they're never gonna kill my Cockney pride. This is a very moving song, folks, and not least because of the looniness behind the hopeless defiance.
Rose in red this morning. I'm gonna miss her blood.
But what if Muswell Hillbilly touched your heart? Watch how this next song hits you. It's Shangri-La from the album Arthur again. Here's the song of Arthur, who has successfully made the northern migration from the inner city to the world of identical suburban houses, to live out the rest of his life in the kind of comfort he could only dream of back in the old neighborhood. Here's your reward for working so hard. Gone are the lavatories in the backyard. And that's it, Arthur. There's your reward. Indoor toilets. The little man who gets the train got a mortgage hanging over his head, but he's too scared to complain, 'cause he's conditioned that way. Time goes by and he pays off his debts, got a TV set and a radio for 7 shillings a week. That's 35 pence in today's money, by the way. Higher purchase payments in the days before credit cards. And Ray's voice is so clear, so tender, until, in the bridge, he suddenly modulates into a much harder, mocking voice. And all the houses in the street have got a name, 'cause all the houses in the street, they look the same. Same chimney pots, same little cars, same window panes. The gas bills and the water rates and payments on the car. Too scared to think about how insecure you are. Life ain't so happy in your little Shangri-La. And then the mocking chorus, Shangri-La, la-la-la. Carefree? Hardly. And Shangri-La, after all, was the Himalayan paradise in the novel Lost Horizons, an ideal place where aging slowed down and all was serene. But once anyone left this sacred place, that person would rapidly age and die. Arthur may be secure in his little semi-detached, but only in isolation to all that's going on around him.
Your kingdom to command. You can go outside and polish your car, or sit by the fire in your Shangri-La. Here's your reward for working so hard. Gone are the lavatories in the backyard. Gone are the days when you dreamed of that car. You just want to sit in your Shangri-La. Put on your slippers and sit by the fire. You've reached your top and you just can't get any higher. You're in your place and you know where you are, in your Shangri-La. Sit back in your old rocking chair. You need not worry, you need not care. You can't go anywhere. Shangri-La, Shangri-La, Shangri-La. He's conditioned that way. Time goes by and he pays off his debts. Got a TV set and a radio for 7 shillings a week.
Shangri-La, Shangri-La, Shangri-La. chimney pot, the same little car, same window panes. The neighbors call up saying things that you should know. They say their lies, they drink their tea and then they go. And they tell your business in another Shangri-La. The gas bills and the water rates, the payments on the car. Too scared to think about how insecure you are. Life ain't so happy in your little Shangri-La. Shangri-La, Shangri-La, la 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 la
The next time someone wants to give you a simplistic account of the social conditions in London after the war, remember these songs, with their delicate balance between anger at the capitalists and the bureaucrats, pity for the working-class family, and mockery for the shallowness they are contented to accept in their lives. But then there comes the swinging 60s. The Kinks had their share of songs about this time, including Dedicated Follower of Fashion, with its celebration of the Carnaby Street dandies. And there were several songs about the music business, and songs located in many different parts of London. Barclay Mews, Lavender Hill, Denmark Street, Willesden Green, and most famously, Waterloo Sunset. But there's no time for these now. There's time, in fact, for only two more songs. The first song is not very well known, and that's a shame, because I think it is one of the Kinks' very best songs, and it's also officially their last song. A bonus track at the end of their final album, Phobia, from 1993. It's called Did Ya, and it looks back on the swinging 60s with all that appearance of freedom and asks us the question, did you ever think? Did we ever think that all the light and excitement would turn into the sordid, dirty, depressed London of Margaret Thatcher? Now just a tourist place, a place where your car will get towed away, where there's no one left on the King's Road. Did you ever think it wouldn't last forever? Did you ever think that it would get this bad? Did you ever think that everything would get so crazy? Did you ever think we'd all believe the hype? Did you ever think the classes would all revert back to type? Did you ever think the system ever really got it right? Did you ever think when things were really fab that we'd be looking through a dustbin for a dog end to drag? And sleep on park benches wrapped in plastic bags. Did you ever think that it would get this crazy? Did you ever think that it would get this way? And then the final line, picking up the rhyme from crazy. What rhymes with crazy? It's one of the most amazing final lines I know. Did you ever think that we would pay the price for being lazy? We can't blame the capitalists and bureaucrats. We have to blame ourselves for being so seduced by the good times that we forgot to get to the heart of the problems and make some lasting changes. And so these Londoners, whom we saw driving out to Potter's Bar and defying Hitler and settling in their little Shangri-Las and then living it up in their dedicated following of fashion, they are now just swept away. That's how it felt in the early 1990s. and behind the song come flashes of sunny afternoon, the glorious Kinks single celebrating that easy life that was so seductive. This is an odd song, and I hope you'll love it.
Went for a walk down the old King's Road to see if anybody was there. But there was nobody home, a three by Water Street, and they had sold Cadogan Square. And I remember myself in my tie-dye sweater and my hipster corduroy flare. As I knocked on doors and walked down one-way streets that led nowhere. Oh, did you ever think it wouldn't last forever? Did you ever think that it would get this bad? Did you ever think that everything would get so crazy? Now the Chelsea drugstore needs a fix. It's in a state of ill-repair. My Cuban heels are hurting my feet just to add to my despair. La-dee-da's drove many cars in the summertime. Now there's hold away for parking on a double yellow line. And they can't pay the fine.
Did you ever think
we'd all believe the hype?
Did you ever think
the classes all would revert back to type?
Did you ever think
the system ever really got it right? Oh, baby. They filled us full of false illusions and promiscuity. So boy, did you ever think this green and pleasant land would end up in the bottom of some garbage can?
Did you ever think
a dustbin full of promises and half-hearted plans? Oh, baby.
That was Thatcher's London. What about Tony Blair's London? Surely things got much better there. Oh yes, for some people, as a cool Britannia veneer, like Tony's smile itself, settled over the city. But with the loss of all that old London, In the title song of his 2007 solo album, Working Man's Cafe, Ray laments the loss of any trace of working-class culture in London. Just shopping centres and retail outlets now, everywhere now feeling like America, he says. And instead of working man's cafes, where geezers chatted together over strong milky tea and cigarettes, there are internet cafes with people sitting solitary, staring at the screen. Well, it's really good to see us come so far, but haven't we forgotten who we are? Taking out a larger loan, equity relief, and mortgages. Well, and so we'll end this evening's show with this sad song of loss. Sad, but with something sweet, too, as though what was lost had also given us the strength to bear the loss itself, and to face whatever new changes will come to London in 2012. And this has been Evening Under Lamplight with Robert Louis Abrahamson on Cambridge 105, Community Radio in Cambridge, celebrating this evening London with the Kinks mostly. And here's Ray Davies without the Kinks, closing the show with Working Man's Cafe.
Looking for the Working Man's Cafe in the shopping centre of the town. Looking for somewhere to fit in among the retail outlets. Bought a pair of new designer pants where the fruit and veg man used to stand. I always used to see him there selling old apples and pears, chatting up the pretty girls with knocked off goods in the van. Don't you know he was a working man? Long ago he was a working man. In the working man's cafe, the working man's cafe. Everything around me seems unreal. Everywhere I go it looks and feels like America. We've really come a long way down this road, improving our surroundings as we go, changing our roots and culture. But don't you know, long ago, there was a working man. Don't you know, we were a working man. And we'd sit and pass the time of day at the working man's cafe. I thought I knew you then, but will I know you now? There's gotta be a place for us to meet. I'll call you when I've found it. I only hope that life has made us a little more grounded. Hey man, I see you now. Oh, we were a working man, and here we are at the working man's cafe. Good to see us come so far, but haven't we forgotten who we are? Taking out a larger loan, equity relief and mortgages. We all seem to pass the time of day online at the internet cafe. And if you forget my face, in case you've forgotten just who I am, I'm the kid with the greasy spoon firmly held in my hand. Don't you know I was a working man? Long ago we were a working man, and we sat and spent the time of day at the working man's cafe.